Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, December 14, 2021. The South Sudan government shuts down two media houses in Juba and Kapoita.
I came in a car, about eight of them, and then they entered into the compound, they surrounded the studio, and then three people came in and they ordered the staff, the presenters who was on air, and told to come out of the studio.
And South Sudan promises to begin screening troops selected for the country's unified forces.
With that, I would like to once again officially inform all the necessary unified forces that might have left training centers for various reasons, ranging from permission, medical leave, and other leaves, to immediately report back to their respective training centers.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Joint Defense Board is expected to begin the process of graduating unified forces in various training camps located across the country this week. Members of the Defense Board say parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement have secured funds to carry out screening and deploying of the unified forces. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The Joint Defense Board is the body tasked with ensuring that forces from the various parties who signed the 2018 peace agreement are unified into one national army after graduating from training camps around the country. Lieutenant General Gabriel Duop Lam, Acting Chief of General Staff of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, chaired Monday's joint meeting and made the announcement following a meeting at Army Headquarters in Juba. Major General Lul Roy Kwang, spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force, said Monday that 270 officers from parties to the peace deal have been selected and tasked to conduct the screening exercise in the various training camps.
With that, I would like to once again officially inform all the necessary unified forces that might have left training centers for various reasons, ranging from permission, medical leave, and other leaves, to immediately report back to their respective training centers for them not to miss out on the screening and reorganization of the forces.
General Kwang says 53,000 forces are expected to be screened in 18 training camps across South Sudan. He said Monday that he would lead the team that will conduct the screenings of forces in Greater Bahr El Ghazal on the site of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Kwang said Brigadier General Wichang Duop from the South Sudan Opposition Alliance would lead the team screening forces in parts of Greater Upper Nile region. General Kwang said Colonel Lampaul Gabriel from the SPLIO would lead a team to screen forces in the Equatorial region. Colonel Gabriel said the screening exercise is being carried out after the National Pre-Transitional Committee handed over funds to the Joint Defense Board needed to conduct the exercise, which was slated to take place several months ago. Gabriel refused to say how much money was provided for the screening exercise.
On behalf of the JDB, issue to do with money is always confidentiality is concerned or is put forward. Up to now, we don't know how much is given to the chairperson of JDB so that we're able to dispatch. But I believe we're given some cash by the NTC. And that is going to be enough for us to be able to go to the training center. Much is not enough.
The screening of forces is a key part of unifying former rebel and government forces, as required by the peace deal to professionalize the South Sudanese Army. General Kwang says once the screenings are completed, the parties are expected to agree on leadership of the unified command structure of the unified forces and graduate them.
Next, we'll come with a report on the screening, a reorganization of the forces. Then we come back with a report. Yes, look, these are the forces that are fit to serve in the various organized forces, starting with the military. We have our own rules and regulations guiding our military formations, along with the South Sudan National Police Service from all the parties to the agreement. Same thing with correctional services. These all organized forces are going to be put in their military formations by their own representatives. And then once we come, of course, whoever does not qualify for military service will be handed over to DDR.
Earlier, the government had said a lack of resources and a United Nations arms embargo hindered the graduation of forces. Colonel Gabriel says the parties have yet to resolve the issue of leadership of the unified command structure of the forces.
There has been some disagreement, and I believe up to now they have not resolved it because it's at the level of the principals. As you said, as General Lul put it, the SPLIO was focused on the 50-50 ratio. Yeah, so that disagreement still stands up to now between the principals, because the president also is saying it's supposed to be 40-60.
Gabriel says Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has asked the principals of the parties to the peace deal to attend a retreat in January when participants are expected to address the unresolved issue of the leadership of the Unified Forces Command Structure. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udu in Juba.
South Sudan has shut down two media houses in Kapoita and Juba. Chris Marol, the editor and chief executive officer of the Radio Community Network, says eight security officials stormed their compound over the weekend and ordered the staff to leave. The Union of Journalists of South Sudan is appealing to the government to develop good working relationship with the media as the country gears towards elections. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
The management of Singata FM says they were caught by surprise when a Toyota Land Cruiser carrying about eight security officers from Torit stormed their compound on Friday evening and ordered all staff members to leave the premises except the radio station's security guards. Chris Marol is editor and chief executive officer of Radio Community Network.
I came in a car, got eight of them, and then they entered into the compound, they surrounded the studio, and then three people came in and they ordered the staff, the presenters who was on air, and told to come out of the studio. So when the guy came out, then they came with a padlock. So they locked the studio. And then both the on-air and production studio. Then when they asked what is the problem, they said you go to Torit.
Marol says he contacted Eastern Equatoria State Information Minister Patrick Oting to ask why the state government sent security officers to close the station. Marol says Oting confirmed he ordered the shutdown of the radio station, but did not disclose the exact reason for doing so.
So the minister told me that he's the one who orders the security to close the radio station, because the station management is not cooperating with the state government. So when I tried to find out are there any specific reasons, he said no, he doesn't want to discuss over the phone.
Marol says Oting insisted that management of Singaita FM travel to Torit to hear the reasons for closing the station. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Torit earlier today, Oting says what he calls the misunderstanding between the state government and management of Singaita Community Radio started in November when station managers refused to cover a visit of a high government delegation from Juba, who were in the area to view a site where the government plans to construct a university.
In the evening, we were supposed to be on the air, on the talk show. So this is true. The committee of the team of Equatorial National University plus the one of the Ministry of National Ministry of General Education of Higher Education and Research. So we wanted that opportunity to be aired, so that also the community can able to have their view, you know, because we might be taking to them something they don't want, you know, but they wanted that thing should go on the air so that the community can contribute, and also we hear from them. Meanwhile, also the team will also do their own research.
Oting says the management of Singaita FM did not cover the event and also denied the state government airtime to host a talk show that would have enabled officials to hear directly from members of communities in Kapoita. He claims the station has also been circulating hate speech against Eastern Equatoria state officials, which he says incites the communities against their own government if not stopped. Oting says once station managers report to state headquarters in Torit, everything will be sorted out and the radio station will resume its daily operations. In Juba, the South Sudan Media Authority suspended the number one citizen newspaper from operations. The newspaper's managers declined to comment on the forced closure. Patrick Oyet, chairperson of the Union of Journalists, says the newspaper's license was suspended because the media authority believes the paper does not have a full-time editor-in-chief.
According to media authority, the number one citizen is not having an editor. In their term, they are not having an editor. They wanted an editor, especially, I think, an editor-in-chief, something like that. They're saying now they think that the current editor-in-chief is very busy with other things, and because of that, they have some concerns about some of the articles that come out of Number One Citizen, and they suspect that that is because they don't have an editor-in-chief, or the editor-in-chief is too busy. And because of that, the license was not renewed.
Oyet says the journalists' union is working hard to ensure the issue is resolved as soon as possible by encouraging dialogue between the media authority and the management of the number one citizen newspaper, as well as between the Torit state officials and management of the Singaita radio station in Kapoita.
Media and the government are actually partners. We need good working relationship. We need to develop a good working relationship because the government needs the media to get information to the public and also to get information from the public. And we also need government to answer questions that the public are raising. And for that reason, we are supposed to work as partners. The idea of shutting down media houses, harassing journalists, expelling some of them from one state and so on, cannot help us. It cannot take us anywhere.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Sapana Abui, the Director General of the Media Authority, for comment, but Abui said he was caught up in traffic and could not talk. He later turned off his phone. For VOA News, I am David Monadanga in Juba.
Nigerian police on Monday detained journalist Fisayo Soyombo, the director of the Foundation for Investigative Journalism. A report in the Daily Post of Nigeria Monday said Soyombo received a text message from police on November 23, 2021, saying they were conducting an investigation in which his name and phone number appeared. The police asked Soyombo to come to the police headquarters for an interview with the Inspector General. Soyombo honored the request on Monday, only to be detained. Nigerian human rights activist Omoyele Sowore says the Foundation for Investigative Journalism had written a story on the awarding of contracts for the construction of police camps. He says activists hope to retain a lawyer for journalist Soyombo on Tuesday.
Fisayo is an investigative journalist, and he writes a lot of investigative reporting. I mean, he does a lot of investigative reporting on corruption in Nigeria. He was invited by the police hierarchy today that they wanted to investigate that he's not by match in one corruption story that they themselves were investigating. He arrived there, but luckily, they took his phones. Before they did, he did post something on Facebook, and I think Twitter, that they have just arrived to the police headquarters. That is the last we heard from him. But what we later found out was that he had done a report on police corruption recently, and that's apparently the reason they're after him.
What sort of police corruption that he reported on?
It's about a housing project in the police department in Nigeria, the police force. That's the reporting he did, and that what got him pissed off, to the best of my understanding.
What is the procedure? Can the police just pick him up for doing a report, or can they bring him to court?
They pick up people randomly for reporting that they claim is criminal libel, which is alien to Nigerian laws, but that's what they do. So nobody has heard from him. He's not been allowed access to his lawyers, his family, doctors, since he went in there some 7 hours ago.
So what's next? Well, I mean, did you say that you are trying to hire some lawyers?
Yes, by tomorrow we will get some human rights lawyers to visit him and find out why he's in detention.
That's Omoyele Sowore, a Nigerian human rights activist. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty from the capital Abuja. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how deadly is Omicron variant of COVID-19? Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in a gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at Omicron variant of COVID-19. The World Health Organization says data from South Africa indicate the Omicron variant may result in less sickening illness than other coronavariants. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says new cases of COVID-19 in Africa have surged by 93% this past week compared to the previous week. That brings the number of reported cases on the continent to more than 8.8 million, including more than 220,000 deaths. It is not known how many of these new cases and deaths are due to the Omicron variant. What is known, however, is Omicron has spread to about 60 countries, 10 of them in Africa. The WHO says almost half of the nearly 1,000 Omicron cases reported globally are in Africa, with the heaviest burden borne by South Africa. Richard Mahigo is the coordinator for immunization and vaccines development in the WHO's regional office for Africa. He says it is encouraging to note few of the many people infected with Omicron in South Africa have had to be hospitalized. He notes this suggests the new variant may cause less severe illness.
Data which looked at hospitalization across the country between 14 November and 4 December found that ICU occupancy was only 6.3%. which is very low compared with the same period when South Africa was facing the peak, which was linked at that time to Delta variant. And I'm talking about July this year.
Mahigo says that is a preliminary analysis. He figures it will take at least another 2 to 3 weeks to determine Omicron's full effects. He says researchers are working around the clock to see whether the new coronavirus variant is more contagious, more debilitating, and more resistant to current vaccines and treatments than other variants.
There is an assumption that the current vaccines may not protect people against Omicron. But so far, there is no conclusive evidence that vaccines are ineffective against this new variant. Vaccines have protected, as we know, people from severe disease and hospitalization due to the other variants of concern so far. And there's been no need to modify these vaccines.
Indeed, Pfizer and BioNTech say preliminary data indicate that a booster or a third shot of their coronavirus vaccine is effective against the new variant. The biopharmaceutical company says it is working on an Omicron-specific vaccine, which it hopes will be developed in the next 3 months. In the meantime, the WHO says it continues to support countries to improve genomic surveillance to track the virus and other variants of concern. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, the World Health Organization and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, a leading cancer center in the United States, are planning to provide cancer medication free of charge to children in developing countries suffering from this condition. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Cancer is a leading cause of death worldwide, killing about 10 million people a year. The World Health Organization estimates 400,000 children globally develop cancer every year, with nearly 100,000 dying. The most common types of childhood cancers include leukemias, brain cancers, lymphomas, and solid tumors. WHO reports nearly 9 in 10 children with cancer live in low- and middle-income countries. Andre Ilbawi heads WHO's cancer division in the Department of Non-Communicable Diseases. He says about 80% of children who have cancer in high-income countries survive. He calls this a major achievement and improvement over the past decades.
But that progress hasn't been achieved for children who are living in low- and middle-income countries, where 30% or less will survive a cancer diagnosis. One of the primary reasons is because of care that is simply not available or accessible, and medicines are a core part of the treatment of childhood cancer.
WHO and St. Jude's Hospital have formed a partnership to change this situation. They've established a platform that will dramatically increase access to childhood cancer medicines around the world. To kickstart this program, St. Jude is making a 6-year investment by contributing $200 million. Ilbawi says the money initially will provide medication at no cost to 12 countries that will take part in a 2-year pilot program. He says the governments will be involved in the care of the children and in selecting the medicines that are needed.
From there, we'll work with country partners to make sure those medicines are delivered safely and effectively to the children in need. Over time, this will increase to 50 countries or more within 6 years. This means that almost every child around the world, particularly those in low- and middle-income countries, will benefit from this platform.
The new platform aims to provide safe and effective cancer medicines to approximately 120,000 children between 2022 and 2027. The health partners say the program will be scaled up to include many more beneficiaries in future years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The new Deputy Special Representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan and the UN's Resident Coordinator in the country, Sara Besolo Nyati, is praising the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres for his commitment to gender equality. Nyati succeeded Alan Nouadhou of Benin. She has more than 20 years of experience in international development and humanitarian affairs, including in conflict and post-conflict settings. She also served as resident coordinator in Nepal and the representative of the United Nations Children's Fund in Yemen and Gambia. She told my colleague James Batty, the UN will continue to advocate for governments to ensure gender equality.
If I were to succinctly indicate what this means to me, I would say it means that my granddaughters and the granddaughters of those who are in my age bracket right now in Liberia or in any country in Africa can have hope in relation to the progression of African women and can believe in the fact that African women with talent can be promoted through systems which are viewed as patriarchal, which have been viewed in the past as not being progressive. But the Secretary General of the United Nations has been very clear about gender equality. He's been extremely articulate about his intent to ensure that the UN resembles the countries that make up its membership. And for me, I believe that this provides much hope for young girls.
I want to come back to that topic you talk about women and representation. But let me ask first, you Deputy Special Representative in the UN mission in South Sudan. Now, your appointment comes as implementation of South Sudan's 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement appears to be almost at a standstill. Can we say your appointment comes at an opportune time or a challenging time in South Sudan?
We can say neither. We cannot say anything in relation to my appointment and its timing in relation to situations in South Sudan, because I have not taken up the post in South Sudan. And until I join South Sudan, I can't speak to the issues there.
Earlier this year, you were one of the moderators of the Global Forum on Women Leadership. Let's talk about women participation for Africa. The data provided this year by the Interparliamentary Union, I think it was in February, has Rwanda leading all of Africa with 61% female participation in parliament. Much of Africa is still far below the goal of at least 50% women participation. What do you think the UN can do to raise this number?
I think for the side of the UN continues to advocate with governments, with countries, in terms of policies, in terms of systems, to ensure gender equality for us to work towards it. But this really the responsibility of the people of each of the countries. It's the responsibility of the governments of each of the countries. When you go to the poll to vote, you need to think about who you're voting for and what that means for you in terms of your rights being fulfilled and who can best fulfill your rights. And I think educating people on the role of women and the importance of women having a say in the development of their countries and their communities is very important. But ultimately, it's not only about elected positions, it's about appointed positions as well. And so heads of state need to be committed to the statements that they make, the commitments they make in relation to gender equality.
That's Sarah Besolo Nyeti, the new deputy special representative in the UN mission in South Sudan and the UN's resident coordinator in South Sudan. She spoke with VOA's James Batty.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Lasso and the song Wululu Konyo. We have been listening to Emmanuel Lasso and the song Wululu. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Come on.